This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Yesterday on Stateside, Cynthia Canty spoke with Evan Pratt, who is Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner. They talked about a plume of a toxic chemical, 1,4-dioxane, which is gradually spreading toward Ann Arbor's drinking water source. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality is in charge of monitoring and determining what steps should be taken to prevent the pollution. Earlier, we recorded an interview with Robert Wagner. He's the DEQ's Remediation and Redevelopment Division Chief. Let's start by taking this in chronological order. When and how did this toxic chemical get into the ground and start spreading?
Well, thanks, Lester. This started back in the 60s, 1966, to approximately 1986 when the Gilman Corporation used 1,4-dioxane in the manufacture of medical filters at their facility there in Ann Arbor. And releases occurred in a variety of ways at the facility as they were using it, including discharge through wastewater lagoons, which have eventually reached the groundwater.
According to an article by Ryan Stanton with MLive, when Governor John Engler was in office, he signed a law that changed the allowable amount of dioxane in groundwater from 3 parts per billion and increased it to 85 parts per billion. Why did that happen?
Well, in 1995, the Michigan legislature amended the environmental remediation statute that governs cleanups across the state of Michigan with two notable changes. One is they changed the cancer risk factor from 1 in 1 million to 1 in 100,000. And then they allowed for the use of local ordinances or what are called institutional controls to manage risk associated with contaminated soil and groundwater. Thus, that allows parties to place restrictions on exposure to soil or groundwater, which then manages the risk. So no exposure, no risk to the public, and as a result doesn't require a complete cleanup to what was known back then as non-detect. Of course, today we know we can detect things in soil and groundwater better than ever. You know, we've had over the course of 30 years, we've gone from parts per thousand to parts per million to parts per billion.
Well, we were measuring parts per billion in 1995. I mean, that was not uncommon. Did the DEQ ask for that change?
DEQ administers the law, so no. I mean, we administered the law prior to 95, and we, of course, continue to administer it since the 95 amendments.
The EPA and other studies have indicated the allowable amount should be lower. The DEQ has been asked and said it would propose a lower standard to the legislature for a lot of different toxic chemicals. You've had years to do that. Why hasn't it happened?
Well, let me help you understand the complexity. In 1995, when the amendments went through, to accompany those amendments to law, administrative rules covering the cleanup criteria values were initiated. And it took 7 years to promulgate those rules. So our rules were promulgated in 2002, 7 years after the 1995 amendments. The most recent set of rules are the result of amendments to Part 201, Environmental Remediation, in June of 2012, which called for a comprehensive update to the rules. And I started as chief of this division in January 2013. We started developing those rules as soon as I got here. We initiated some stakeholder groups to start reviewing our drafts of the rules because stakeholder involvement and support is necessary in order for the rules to be promulgated without opposition. Unfortunately, we did not achieve stakeholder consensus in about July or August of 2013, and thus we went forward with drafting new rules because the existing rules that were in place were set to expire December 31st of 2013. Those new rules, I will be clear, were not the comprehensive update that we had hoped to do. So in December, end of the year, 2013, new rules were promulgated. The criteria numbers that we talk about did not change, but we had to have new rules in place. And then we assembled a new process for stakeholders in January 2014, immediately after that. And basically, the stakeholder group worked through what the update, comprehensive update, would look like for every single chemical, for every single pathway, including some new pathways. And they basically gave the department their recommendations in November of 2014. And in January of 2015, we accepted those recommendations, and we began development of this comprehensive update. So currently where we're at is we're very close to completing that comprehensive rule update, which will then go through the administrative rule promulgation process. It does not go directly to the legislature.
I think you'll understand that as people hear your explanation of this process, there's going to be some frustration, because here is one of the biggest pollution problems in the state. It's threatening a major city's water supply. Why hasn't this been a higher priority? Wasn't there some way to fast track this?
Well, we're moving as fast as we can, and I expect that this rule package will be completed in 3.5 years rather than 7 years is what it took previously. But having said that, know that with respect to the city of Ann Arbor, no one is exposed or drinking 1,4-dioxane, nor has that happened. So while we clearly understand that people are concerned about it and they want to know what's going on, and they want to make sure their water is safe, as do we, which is one of our highest priorities, to make sure they have safe drinking water, no one at the moment or in the near term is threatened with drinking water that would be contain 1,4-dioxane.
Well, the information I have indicates private wells have been contaminated. The city of Ann Arbor has had to shut down one water intake. So what has to happen before there's real action and real cleanup?
Well, my understanding, the city voluntarily shut down that well, and they had their own lawsuit with with Paul, and that was part of their agreement. With respect to the two wells that you mentioned, those are located in Scioto Township. So specifically, we are aware of those, and we are prepared to take care of those locations in the event that the concentrations of 1,4-dioxane exceed either our current cleanup criteria or our new proposed cleanup criteria.
The DEQ came to a settlement with the company responsible for this dioxane plume. You accepted $500,000 from the former Gelman Sciences company, the Paul Corporation that you're talking about. That money was for past monitoring. DEQ, though, gave up the rights to ask for more monitoring or more money for the monitoring. Does that mean taxpayers are now on the hook for monitoring this toxic chemical slowly making its way to the Huron River, where Ann Arbor gets its drinking water?
No. Paul Corporation does all of the monitoring of the groundwater and the movement of 1,4-dioxane in the groundwater.
How confident are you of getting correct data?
Well, we review that data, obviously, every time it comes in. We've been looking at trends with respect to concentrations for 20-some years, and so we're fairly confident that the data that we're receiving is representative of the conditions in the field.
How do you confirm that? I mean, you said fairly confident. Are you doing any independent testing?
Well, know that every chemical, when it goes to the laboratory after a sample is collected, there's some variability with respect to whether it's 10 or 15 or 7 parts per billion. And that's just the normal variability that one would see. It doesn't stay the same concentration every day, and plus there's always some margin of error that can occur. So when you look at 20, 25 years of data, as we've been looking at, you would expect that trend to stay fairly constant, except for where higher concentrations are moving, say, from one point to another, and then you would basically track those. If you start seeing really odd numbers, either significantly higher or significantly lower, the first thing you would do would resample to see if to verify that those numbers are accurate. If the resampling verifies those numbers are accurate, then you know, you have a pretty reliable foundation to go forward. So it's about testing and testing and testing over and over again, and basically looking at those trends that helps you understand, you know, whether those numbers are truly representative. It's kind of like checking your blood pressure annually for 25 years and seeing how your blood pressure is tracking. There may be some measurements that aren't precise in that 25-year period, but generally you're going to have a pretty good idea what those numbers are.
You're talking about some fairly low levels there, way below the 85 parts per billion, above the 3 parts per billion we were talking about earlier. But you've seen levels as high as 11,000 parts per billion. What does that tell you about the future of the spread of this plume?
Well, it's fairly normal when you have a release to have where the release occurred, especially high concentrations of the chemical, you're going to have high concentrations. So those kinds of numbers are not unusual. They kind of typically represent what we call the, you know, the core of the groundwater contamination, and then outwardly from there and down gradient from there. So as groundwater moves, you will see concentrations decreasing, both with respect to dilution in any degradation that might occur, chemical or biodegradation. So a typical map of groundwater contamination would show a fairly hot core area immediately below or down gradient of the actual release site, and then you would see corresponding lower decreasing levels outward from there. And that's exactly what we see with the 1,4-dioxane plume. Most of the very high concentrations are very close to the Gelman site, and then as we move away from the Gelman site in every direction, concentrations go down significantly and eventually get down to less than one part per billion.
And is that the projection for the next, say, 10, 20, 30 years? Or are we going to see these higher concentrations actually reach the Huron River, where Ann Arbor gets its drinking water?
No, because we have, as part of the cleanup, they are currently running groundwater purge and treat systems to reduce those high concentrations.
What does that mean? Tell me what that involves.
It involves large diameter groundwater wells that are placed into these core areas where there's high concentrations, and then groundwater is extracted containing the high concentrations to the surface. The contaminant is removed, and then that cleaned up water is discharged. In this case, it's discharged through a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination Permit that is issued by the department.
What happens if the water is polluted, the drinking water for Ann Arbor is polluted? What's the contingency plan?
Well, typically, when groundwater supplies, individual water supplies are contaminated, if we have a responsible party, they provide safe water. If they don't, then the state of Michigan, DEQ, will provide safe water. In the event of a municipal system...
Let me stop you there. If they don't, aren't they obligated to? And if the DEQ supplies it, that means the taxpayers supply it.
That is correct, because we want to make sure people are provide safe water first. After that all occurs, we sort out who pays, and that usually goes to court. So ultimately, a court will decide who pays.
You know, as you well know, because of the Flint water debacle, the public's confidence in the DEQ is badly shaken. I wonder how that affects your approach to this dioxane plume that threatens Ann Arbor's water sources?
Well, we've been dealing with groundwater contamination and private wells, community wells, and municipal well contamination, you know, since the late 70s. Myself, for 30 years, since 85, we have been providing bottled water to affected residents as soon as possible after detecting contamination in their well. We have been providing deeper wells, or we have been hooking people up to municipal water. We have worked with municipalities to protect their wells or to replace their wells using public funds for more than 30 years. So we will continue to do that, no change. One of our first priorities is to make sure the public has safe drinking water.
Okay, I want to go back to that question about the contingency plan. What exactly, how would that happen? Because bottled water is great for drinking, but if you've got dioxane, is it safe to bathe in? Is it, you know, if it's not safe enough to drink, is it safe to use for anything?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, toxicity of chemicals can vary considerably with respect to how you're exposed to them. So the 1,4-dioxane number, the lowest level is linked to ingestion. So the exposure route is that you drink it, and that number is very low. But for contact with skin, the number is higher. I don't know what it is right now, but it's not the lowest number. And so it's variable for all chemicals. Some chemicals won't be absorbed through your skin, so skin contact would not be a factor. Other chemicals are inhaled, and so that's the most risky pathway, and others is through ingestion. So, you know, if we wanted to get into thermal contact, I could get that number for you, but I don't have that right now.
I would like that number. Robert Wagner is the DEQ's Remediation and Redevelopment Division Chief. Thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.